Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. For more information about the news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geeksone.com. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, my geeklings. Welcome back.
Episode of Geeks On.
Have you missed us? I'm not even sure if we're playing these in order anymore.
No, we're not. E3, the video game convention, has killed our radio show because we've been working so much. So
we now actually have the lost episode. We have recorded an episode that we haven't had the time to edit together. So we're going to hold it off. We're going to hold it in reserves until one week when we can't get together.
Which just means all of our news stories are going to be old.
And completely out of date.
Completely.
And if anybody comments on that news story today, it won't make any sense to anybody.
No.
Well, we have a special guest this week.
Hello.
This is Nay Abong, who is going to talk to us about the show Lost.
Not Lost. No.
I mean, if you want me to, I could.
Nice.
But
nice,
I'd much rather talk about the show I work on.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow, you're done. And you're cut off. No, you're not.
And we thought I was the punchy one.
Actually, the problem is I was just reading your... I was just reading the interview with Sean where he was talking about Lost.
Nay works on the hip new show Invasion, which is nearing its end of first season.
No. You got to start over. Oh, come on now. You can't redo that. That was genius.
I thought that was great.
That's genius. That must stay.
Well, save it for your gag reel.
Yeah. All right. So Nay works on the show Invasion, and you want to tell us a little bit about you're like the jack of all trades there. You do like everything.
I do wear many hats. It's
you like writing, producing, everything.
Yeah, I am. My official title is associate producer on Invasion, and I actually worked as Sean Cassidy's development executive prior to the show going into production. So I was there from the very beginning when the show was conceived and developed, and the pilot was written, and we had a fantastic time shooting the pilot with the great Tommy Schlamme. And
Tommy Schlamme?
Yes. Mr. Tommy Schlamme, West Wing, ER, Friends, those little shows. He directed the pilot. Mm-hmm. And then when the show went into production, I sort of bounced back and forth between being on set for the first episode, just so we had sort of a sense of continuity, someone who was there on the pilot being there, you know, during production to answer questions or give some input on Sean's behalf. And then I sort of segued into being in the writer's room because Sean's job requires him to be in so many places at once that he thought it might be a good idea for someone who sort of spoke Sean to be in the room and sort of help give the writers some guidance in the sense of, you know, what would Sean do at this point or what wouldn't he do?
Well, he was a hardy boy.
Sean was a hardy boy. He's probably most well known for that. I actually did not know that when I began working for him. I sort of missed that whole hardy boy and pop star to do Ron fame. Yeah. I only knew him as a really, you know, well-respected television writer.
This is the same Sean Cassidy as Partridge Family?
No, that's his brother David.
That's David Cassidy.
His older brother David. Yeah.
But you know what? He was in the television version of Breaking Away, wasn't
he? Yes, he was.
Breaking Away was a great, great movie.
It was a fantastic
movie. And I remember the television show, too. I mean, I don't know if it was on very long, but it was a great idea.
It was on for a season. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Did he tape his feet to the bicycle?
Well, I can't remember if he did that in the television show. But he did it in the movie.
Well, he went on from acting to writing. He did the show American Gothic.
Yeah.
I loved that show.
It was a great show.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did that go to the way of the dodos? I don't understand.
I mean, I think the show was a little ahead of its time, right. And I know that American Gothic was recently released on DVD.
American Gothic was definitely ahead of its time. It was a really dark show.
Very dark.
But it was kind of at the end of a period when dark shows were hot, and then dark shows kind of went out of the mainstream, and then they came back in.
That was the one with Caleb, you know? and the
right,
kid,
right.
And
Lucas
the sheriff,
Black,
who was just
the
fabulous.
Evil Southern sheriff.
Yeah. He was the devil.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the most
or was
amazing.
He?
Or was
that was
he?
The ongoing debate yeah. in the press between Sean Cassidy and Sam Raimi, who was executive producing that show.
Oh.
Along with cool. David Icke, who is now doing Battlestar Galactica.
I am a
man. Real. See, yeah. that, whenever you can see the dissemination of where people go off of their shows, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So wait. Crazy evil cop. I'm starting to see.
Are you sensing a pattern? Maybe
pattern
Sean is working
here.
Something out.
Some issues with authority.
Tell me about your mother.
Okay. Should we do news?
Shall we hit it?
Let's do some news.
All right. Why don't we roll with me?
Okay.
Surprising.
Strange. This
should
news
we fill
topic.
In our viewers on what happened just now?
No, Aaron know? Screwed up again. We went through like 20 minutes of show. With,
and
with
it was magical.
Guest.
And in front of a guest. And so I'm blushing right now. So Matt,
all right, good.
What is it?
Okay. So a team of British scientists investigating whether a tiny tropical hookworm could provide a cure for asthma and hay fever have committed the ultimate act of bravery by infecting themselves with the parasite.
So these scientists just without just sat down and applied something that they had no clue what was going to happen.
I'm not swallowing these worms. I don't care how bad I'm wheezing.
All right. Well,
injected, help. Swallowed.
Yes. I've given away
smeared.
The surprise to the group, but here's how
it's
it basically works.
It's a suppository, isn't it?
It's not a suppository, Don. No, it's not like that old joke about the tapeworm. Anyway. I'll tell you off the air. Anyway, this
for
is how
family
it does.
Show, man.
Yeah. So basically, they did a comparison of Western countries with Africa and found out that in Africa there are higher occurrences of malaria, there are higher occurrences of parasitical diseases, there are high occurrences of sexually transmitted diseases, but there are very low occurrences of allergy, asthma, stuff like that. In Western countries, you have incredibly low occurrences of malaria, etc., but you have incredibly high occurrences.
So these scientists just decide to skip all those killers and go, why don't we try solving asthma in Africa?
Right. Exactly. Well, no, they
let's
knew
skip all the 10 other ones that are dropping people and
right.
just go with the
they went,
wheezers.
Yeah, but they're not wheezing. Yeah. All right. But they decided to try and find out why it was that primarily African countries are not dealing with a lot of asthmatic issues. So,
because all the people who have asthma are dead
right? Yeah.
Probably.
Well, they found out that this hookworm, this very, very specific hookworm,
mm-hmm.
Hooks onto the inside of your intestine, and it provides an immunosuppressant response, so that basically it shuts down your ability to have all these allergies and everything like that.
Did you mention it has to burrow through your skin?
Well, no, I have not mentioned
your
that
bloodstream,
yet.
Bloodstream.
Yes.
Yeah. Why punch holes in your lungs.
Yes. Why do you explain
well,
that?
Well, there are cons to everything.
Yeah. Basically, what the hookworm does is you apply it with a plaster to the skin. It burrows through your skin, goes up through your veins, into your lungs. Actually, I think it actually makes its way into your esophagus first, and then you swallow it. But it has to go through a process first to acclimate itself
can
to your system.
Can we just swallow it, like stick it in a pill?
No, I don't think so. But it makes its way into your lungs, burrows its way through your lungs into your intestine, then hooks onto the inside of your intestine, and then begins to suck your blood and forms a lot of eggs, which you excrete. But one egg eventually will become an adult, and they can multiply in your intestine thereby, and they successively hook onto your intestines and suck okay. more and more blood.
I got to put something out there. I was raised by a holistic doctor,
yes.
right? I mean, I was always raised with the impression that these natural remedies had no additional side effects, you know? This is an additional side effect.
I think the process.
Yeah, just ew.
I think the process is an additional side effect. But, you know.
Maybe you want to see my worms?
Yeah. Professor David Pritchard and his team at Nottingham University School of Pharmacy administered different amounts of the hookworms to themselves to prove that it would be safe. Pritchard himself stuck 50 of the larvae onto his skin. It was fairly itchy when they first go through the skin, he admitted. After that, you don't really notice them.
Remember, David Banner experimented on himself, and he became the Incredible Hulk.
We all saw how that turned out.
It is a great image, though. Like,
I was all about his father.
Facility of research scientists with worms just scooching around on the carpet all day, you know?
Right.
That's
little
so
dog
disgusting.
Humor.
I can't explain to you how bad that is.
All right. So moving away from the worms,
Please.
Quickly. Yes, as quickly as possible.
Hey, you have allergies. They would be good for you. You need some worms.
I'm not going for worms. I'll stick with the allergies. So, according to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the Royal Philips Electronics Company has created a technology that will let broadcasters freeze a channel during commercials so viewers wouldn't be able to avoid it. The concept here is that if you wanted to avoid your commercials, you would actually have to pay a fee.
What?
No.
Yeah, we were, exactly, we were just, because we had already done this news story, we were just discussing some of the worst cases of this we've seen. In fact, you said that you've already experienced this in shooting, like you're on the creative end.
Right, I mean, not so much on our show, but I've seen it on other shows.
Alias.
Well, right.
Wait. I've noticed Alias is a bad offender on that, too.
Let's be clear what you're talking about, that advertisers have been looking for different ways
to embed their material within
their material.
Right.
So that's different than what this story is, but it's
true.
It comes from the same place, that basically advertisers are losing their, losing their ability to reach the audience with TiVo.
Right.
So they're looking for different ways of basically forcing us to watch their commercials.
But we have not had a reduction in television advertisement as of yet, but we have seen an increase in terms of other forms of advertising.
But we're not sure if we... I don't think any of us has actually seen the numbers of whether advertisers are screaming, running away from television and not paying for it. I think television, think probably...
Did you hear about the thing on My Wife and Kids? Damon Wayans, actually, one of his... They said, we have to advertise this. They were going to do a vertical integration. And they had to advertise this other movie. I think it was like, a Britney Spears movie or somebody else's movie. And one of the girls was like, have you seen this new movie, so-and-so? Oh, my God, it was so awesome. Oh, my God, you haven't seen that? And it literally became one of the plot lines of that episode.
Ugh. Oh, my
wow.
God.
And the whole thing was about going to see this movie and how terribly important it was to go see this movie. And Damon Wayans read the script, and he said, this is not my show. I don't want to be in this episode. You can mention me as dad in other parts of the episode, but I want out. And if this ever happens again, I'm off the show.
That's
wow.
good.
You got to stand. I mean, the man stood up for an ethic, which I think.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. You have to make money.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a business. But there is a point where it's crossing the line to the point where you are not even.
Yeah, but.
I sat down and watched a bunch of the Invasion episodes yesterday. And I have to admit, I'm a little hypersensitive about advertising, so I tend to look for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any in yours.
Yeah, it's a little difficult, really, to
MREs?
Do in a show that's post-natural disaster. So, I mean, we were a little lucky in that regard, mm-hmm. but I mean, I know that for the shows that do it, there was a show on television a few years ago called American Dreams. That was the show that was about the girl who, the girl who danced on Bandstand, period show. And the producer of that show, the executive producer, Jonathan Prince, really found creative ways to employ advertising into their show. I remember they had an ongoing storyline where one of the daughters was entering some sort of essay competition sponsored by Campbell Soup about something like why America is great or something, and it was like free advertising for Campbell Soup throughout the entire episode.
But they used to do that.
So right,
that
right.
wasn't abnormal.
Right, but it was, I mean, clearly he was doing product placement, but they found an organic way to make it work for the show. And Jonathan Prince has since gone on, since the end of that show, to, I forget where exactly this is going on, but he now has this new job where people are coming to him in the entertainment industry, and he's sort of the new like advertising in entertainment czar, and his job is to find new and creative ways to marry advertising and creative writing so that it's something that both Madison Avenue and Hollywood will be happy with.
See, as long as it fits, I'm actually okay with it. As long as it fits.
Is there going to be a time where money goes directly from consumer to product, or are we always going to be going from consumer to advertising to product, consumer to production house?
I'm not a big daytime television watcher, but I know that if you are watching All My Children, for example, and you're watching, Susan Lucci on screen, and she's like a fashion guru. She has a company that, Enchantment or something like that. You can actually buy the clothing, the jewelry, the perfume or whatever they're selling at Enchantment. Like, there'll be a little crawl at the bottom of your screen.
Really?
And it's working.
Yeah.
It's working.
I saw one where the dog on the soap opera was wearing this certain collar. And they said, if you would like this collar, go to blah, blah, abc.com, and you can order this, you know, fake diamond dog collar.
Actually, they've got a, they've got this concept that they want to do eventually, much in the way that when you're reading the internet and any word can be hyperlinked. They want to do it in such a way that you could be watching TV and you see a shirt you like, you click on the shirt and
I can't wait for that day. They tried that already with the interactive television. Remember?
Oh, right.
I actually did some jobs with the company and did interactive television. And you could send data stream, which essentially was just HTML, down the pipeline with the there were triggers with the television show. So you could literally click the advertisement or kind of bring the advertisement to you. If you felt like you wanted to see more about what the shoes were, you would hit interactive television and the ad would pop up and you could go straight to the website. It didn't work because they just couldn't convince people to buy interactive television. Or implement it, because if that's all it is, then who wants to...
Who wants to pay for advertising?
Right. So, you know, they were trying to do, you know, interactive Jeopardy so you could actually play along. And it's like, that still wasn't bringing it in. So it died.
I can think of a few shows right now that I would love to make interactive. That would be great.
Like what?
I love Prison Break.
Interactive how?
You're my wife.
I'll tell you after the show.
Done.
You know, I saw the lead at, I've seen him a couple times at the Arclight. So
really?
Hang out at the bar at the Arclight and you can see the lead there.
I will be going there this evening.
You see a little sparkle in the eye. Look at that. It's a little game.
I love him.
The only celebrity I ever run into at the Arclight is Ron Jeremy and the dwarf from Twin Peaks. Those are the only two people
I've
ever
seen. Are you kidding?
Are they together?
No, but I've never actually seen them at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
I've never seen them in the same place.
Maybe the dwarf from Twin Peaks is actually Ron Jeremy's penis.
We've gone down.
Family show.
All right, what's the
Sorry,
next
Flash.
Show? What's the next news?
Although I hear he can make a dance.
I've seen it.
In person or on TV?
In person. At a party.
That's awesome.
And yes, he did make it dance.
I don't know how that guy... That guy is at... I've seen him at couple parties. I don't know how he... I think that's all he does now. Is
yeah,
just
he's like your party trick guy.
Yeah, he's like a really hairy Paris Hilton.
Yeah,
sort of what he does. All right, now, what I'm bringing in is actually a link, but it's a link that I think deserves some more attention. What I'm bringing in is a link to the Video Game Voters Network. It's actually an association. No, I'm putting a disclaimer on here. This association has been put together by video game producers and developers across the United States.
Okay.
But it's a coalition of video game players who want to fight the new legislations that they're trying to put on video games.
Oh.
So it's a way you sign up.
That keep failing.
That keep failing. But...
Do they agree with the ESRB or do they disagree with the ESRB?
I believe this group supports the ESRB because ESRB is self-regulation of the video game industry by the video game industry.
Right.
Most of the federal stuff is saying, that's not working. We need to put federal standards on this thing, which even the movie industry doesn't have.
Right.
Right. So my perception of the whole issue on video game legislation is that it's appealing to people they think vote, meaning parents, against people who they believe either don't vote or can't vote, video game players or children, who they perceive as the primary market of video game players. Now, I'm ashamed to admit that it's a couple people that I like Hillary Clinton, that are spearheading this campaign. I am a diehard Democrat. Everyone knows that. It's no secret.
I've had an ass full of her complaining about this.
Yeah, I can't understand what got up her butt on this subject. But the only thing I can think
is... It's political. She does not give a rat's ass about the video game.
She's trying to sell herself as conservative.
There's actually a second hot coffee that we don't know about that shows Bill Clinton getting some.
Now, when you know, she's probably selling herself to the moms. You know, I mean, that's
what I'm saying. You know. She's trying to appeal to a more conservative crowd. But anyway, the Video Game Voters Network, we're going to put a link up to it. If you sign up to it, they will send you information regarding the different legislations that are coming up.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
cool. And check it out.
I have a news story that's a rumor.
How shock!
No
way!
Mumble, 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 mumble.
Yes, so this is a rumor.
Rutabaga, rutabaga.
Sponge, the website Sponge, which actually always has lots of rumors about video games, they have this rumor that they have inside information about some of the new Xbox Live features.
Okay. Dun, dun, dun.
That will be coming up and debuted at E3. And one of them is that the Xbox will have MAME.
Have what?
MAME, the video game emulator, really? The arcade emulator.
Not the old really? Broadway show.
No.
Oh, God.
Glad somebody got that.
That's funny because I was thinking that and I didn't remember
it. Lucille Ball will actually come installed on each Xbox.
Not Auntie MAME.
I'm like, wow, MAME. That's a great game.
So what this means is that, I mean, it's implying that you would be able to download thousands of old classic video games and be able to play on your Xbox.
I wonder if Microsoft has any kind of license properties of old video game companies that they've picked up along the way.
Well, the other rumor is that Sega, all their 8-bit and 16-bit video games will be downloadable through... through...
I get to play Game Ground again.
Nice. Xbox Live.
I just want to play Dig Dug.
Dig Dug.
That's
Dig
a great
Dug.
Game.
Well, you would be able to download that for MAME. Now, here's the thing about MAME. MAME is, it's kind of like a pirating program. You download it, and then you download these ROMs, which are burned or programs of the original video games, like Asteroids, Pac-Man, all that. And you can play it on your Mac or your PC. And so MAME is, you know, it's not illegal to own MAME or to use MAME. It's just illegal to take these copywritten video games and put them on your computer.
Right.
So I'm not sure exactly what this means, if it is true. I mean, just because you have MAME on your Xbox doesn't mean you can actually play any games, because you have to download these little programs, which are technically illegal. So I'm wondering if this is true. They say, they, you know,
well,
they
maybe,
have this big article.
You know, on Xbox, you can buy games, so maybe it's just that's what they're going to start doing, is selling all those games for $5 a pop or something.
I guess, but they can do that now, so...
Don't know.
I don't know what that means.
Well, they can't necessarily. In order to take these old games and put them on your new system, they actually have to make a fair number of changes. If MAME can just translate that directly into it, it saves them work.
That's true. That is true. It's true. Anyway, and well, not only that, there are rumors about how Xbox Live is going to it's going to change quite a bit, where there's going to have a kid-friendly menu system that you can upload, so it looks different, and so kids can't go and chat with perverts online, which is pretty much everybody on Xbox Live.
Completely takes the fun out of it for me.
I know. So Peter's nights are going to be free.
Oh, I guess I've seen more of Tracy.
Yeah. Anyway, they've got a whole big list. We'll put a link to it on our website.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Don, what's the name of the female character from Legend?
I remember the actress's name is Mia Sara.
I don't remember the name of the character, though. Sorry, just off the subject, I remember that I met the guy this weekend who named his kid Atari, and then the middle name was that girl's, whatever the character's
wow.
name was.
Wow, he must be stopped.
From Legend, yeah.
Wait a minute, he had sex with a woman?
And he named his child Atari.
And she let him name the child Atari.
Yeah, which means attack in Japanese.
Maybe she didn't know. Like, she just went by the phonetics of, like, Atari.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
I like that.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
All right. Nay, would you like to hit
Well, my story, I think, is topical because summer is around the corner. Vacation time is upon us.
Yay,
and
vacation time.
If you, like me, enjoy the outdoors and wildlife, maybe you want to book a trip to Chernobyl. according Chernobyl. To this news story, wildlife is coming back to Chernobyl. The whole Chernobyl district is actually teeming with life.
Cool.
And everyone is shocked.
Yeah, weren't there things like wild boar or all over the place?
All over the place.
Two-headed wild boar.
Surprisingly, no mutations. No animals have been found with cancer or two heads or anything that you would have expected. Just to fill people in on Chernobyl, humans were evacuated from the area 20 years ago when they had the awful nuclear meltdown.
Yeah.
All animal life there died. I think I read something about mouse embryos dissolving and like cattle that were there, they like dissolved. It was really, really terrible.
Humans have been dying for years
right.
afterwards.
Yeah. Right.
The cancer.
Although
ratings.
I just heard an interview with a woman, and she was like, everyone blames everything on Chernobyl. And like, they went to all these different Russians who were always speaking in Russian, and they were like, I have a bad back. Everything aches every day. I'm depressed. I don't know.
And it could be because I'm 80, or it could be because of Chernobyl.
Right? And then that's exactly what it was. It's so hilarious. Like,
I think the story is so fascinating. You know, researchers are saying that animals don't really seem to sense radiation, and they will occupy an area regardless of radiation. Now, obviously, these irradiated animals would be unhealthy for us to eat, but it's working out really well for the animal populations, because without traffic, industry, pollution, these animal communities are thriving.
Yep, just shows and to go you. We die.
Everybody
it'll
lives.
It'll all be reset in about 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. And that's pretty much all it took, 20 years. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things because I've seen this, I've seen something about this as well, which was that any type of animal that hasn't been there for several years, like hasn't gone through several generations, if you bring in something fresh, it will get sick.
Right.
But the things that have been there have somehow adapted.
The Russian Geiger mouse.
The embryos that survived the radiation.
Right. Yeah. And it's sort of evolution at work. I mean, they adapt and find a way to move on and survive.
So, note, listeners, evolution at work.
Wait.
The secret word for the day.
I'm confused. Are we saying that it's safe to go back there because the radiation?
No.
Or that these things can survive radiated?
There are humans living on the outskirts there now.
Right.
So there are humans moving back.
It's not safe to go back.
But these new animals can survive radiation?
Yeah, in fact,
that's messed up.
Inside the sarcophagus, or what they call the actual
hot zone.
Well, no, inside
it's
the
steel and concrete shield
birds
that they put over.
Yeah.
Yeah, and nesting, laying eggs. And
that's actually also because the sarcophagus was built really badly. The reason is the sarcophagus is supposed to be a concrete tomb around it, and it's completely ineffectual.
Oh,
there are huge cracks
clearly
in
there
it,
are some...
and it's still leaking radiation. So birds are actually getting in through the cracks and nesting and stuff like that. So actually there's a new bill out by the World Health Organization and a few others who are putting together a $1 billion project to put together this gigantic tomb that's going to entomb the sarcophagus again. And it's actually going to be big enough to cover the Statue of Liberty.
What I can't help wondering, though, is if there are birds in there and these birds are getting irradiated and the birds are not safe to eat, those birds are still leaving that area at some point, getting eaten by other things, and the radiation is being reintroduced.
It's a really large area. Yeah. I think, and they've also made it a nature preserve. I mean, they're not really
a nature reserve.
We completely messed this up. Let's call it, it's a reserve.
It's our only nature reserve.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting that species that haven't been seen in that area for decades, like the lynx and the eagle owl, are suddenly reappearing and mass producing.
Just need to leave.
That's Mother Nature just going meh.
And now dinosaurs are forming.
I know. A T-Rex was spotted in the area. Do not be alarmed.
My friend Amina always said that things like Katrina and like that was Mother Nature's way of saying, get off. Okay, enough. Get off. All right. So.
Just trying to speed through the rest, I think.
All right. My second news story. There is a viral video out there with a drug enforcement agent who is showing a series of guns to a classroom of kids. And he basically manages to say things like, you know, I am the only person professional enough to hold this weapon. Look, it's empty. And he waves it around by all these kids, and then he manages to shoot himself dead smack in the foot. And then tries to actually reach for a rifle afterwards. And
finish himself off.
Yeah, and they say, no, please don't touch the gun anymore. This guy is suing. He is suing the DEA for saying that it was a drug education presentation. The shooting occurred moments after Page told the children that he was the only person in the room professional enough to carry the weapon. The accident was filmed by an audience member, and the tape, Page claims, was turned over to the DEA. The drug agency subsequently, quote, improperly, illegally, willfully, and or intentionally allowed the tape to be disseminated. As a result, Page, pictured above in the still from the video, has been the target of jokes, derision, ridicule, and disparaging comments directed at him in restaurants, grocery stores, and airports. Page, who writes that he was once regarded as one of the best undercover agents, if not the best, in the DEA.
Right.
What?
This guy sounds like a complete...
May I ask a really basic question?
Yeah.
He's an undercover agent that allowed himself to be filmed?
Yeah, well, he points to the clips recent airing on popular television shows and via the internet as the reason he can no longer work undercover. He also notes that he is no longer, quote, permitted or able to give educational motivational speeches. So homeboy suing.
Who? Oh, please.
He's suing the government and he's suing a series of online things.
This guy is a complete a-hole. I mean, you can tell in the video he's a complete a-hole.
Well,
you can tell that he was never a secret agent. This is a guy who tells people he's a secret agent because he happens to get like a desk job at the DEA or whatever he was working for. So, and now he's trying to sue his way into making some extra cash.
So you're saying this is bullshit?
This is bullshit.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, I feel kind of like I'm reneging on the story which we haven't showed people from last week about the Star Wars kid, because I feel like this is the guy. You know, why are you suing? Why, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's all
we'll
sorts of
things. Another time.
All right.
So this is a new story about because we now have all this problem with gas prices and oil and things like that. Something that we probably never thought we would see is that wind power is actually becoming viable to the extent that the energy companies want to do it.
Yep.
Okay? I mean, energy companies actually want it because, you know, they've always gone towards oil and things like that because it was cheaper for them. Now it's not. Well, what's interesting is an interesting side effect is that in the past we've always had the eco community fighting for renewable sources. Now there's a fringe group of the eco community fighting against windmills.
Yeah, it actually changes the weather.
Yeah, I actually support that. So there's been a lot more research. The current wind farms that we've got have been proven to change the weather.
Wow. So that should... Yeah.
Not only so that, you'd need like an entire state's worth of land to actually generate enough.
They're talking about energy.
I mean, think about it. Wind must be slowed down to move
sense.
A turbine.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have a mass sheet of turbines, you're slowing down an entire weather pattern, a jet stream.
Yeah.
So we should put this in front of the levees down in New Orleans to slow the damn winds down. Make some energy and save the city. Come on, people, work with me here.
They're actually planning on doing a wind farm in the water off of
that's a good
Cape
idea.
Cod.
Well, that's one of the things that they were talking about.
And it's being blocked, actually, by Senator Kennedy, of all people.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the other
ones... I don't think he's saying don't do it. I think he's saying we need to find out what the ramifications of this will be.
This all sounds like a bad Michael Bay film waiting to happen.
I know.
I'm very scared.
The hurricane after tomorrow.
Well, they talk about one of them is in Western Maryland, a proposal to build wind turbines alongside a coal mine on a heavily logged mountaintop next to a transmission line has just been nixed by state officials who called it too environmentally damaging.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just thought that was interesting.
Lenny's got a cancerous tumor the size of a grapefruit, but you know what? It's not windy.
All right, let's get my story.
I just have, this is not really a story, but I know that some of you would be interested in this. Guitar Hero 2 has just been announced.
Woo! Mm-hmm.
Really cool features, like they'll now have split tracks between the three different types of guitars.
Ooh.
So when you plug in a second guitar, one person can play
the lead,
one person can play
rhythm?
The rhythm,
oh,
and one person
yeah.
can play the bass. Very cool.
I'm into that.
Wow.
So
actually, that's a really interesting idea because, I mean, most video games are built upon competing against each other, and there's been this recent niche of video games where you
cooperate
mm-hmm. you know, and that's actually a really interesting idea.
I think it's genius.
There have always been cooperative video games, but not of this type.
No.
This
yeah.
is a
yeah.
new
well,
thing.
And I sure. love Guitar Hero,
yeah.
damn it.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
have you seen Guitar Hero?
I haven't, no.
Guitar Hero, you actually have your joystick, your whatever, is a gigantic guitar, or not gigantic, but it's a guitar, and you pluck it and play the frets.
In, oh, really?
In, and you play in, rock music. Like,
rock music.
You have to play.
Have you ever played, do you play video games at all?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, I was recently introduced to Karaoke Fever, or the Xbox
Revolution.
One. Karaoke Revolution,
yeah.
thank
yeah.
you. Our writing staff addicted to that game.
Yeah.
It's the best game ever.
I play Guitar Hero.
I brought Guitar Hero to work because we, you know, we're doing some video game stuff right now, and I literally stopped down work for a day. Everybody was like trying to battle each other with guitar and stuff. I mean, so if you want to stop work down, go buy Guitar Hero.
I will do that.
$65, and it is a blast.
It's just one of those things I love about the world we live in right now. Like, I went to a video game developers company the other day. I was going through their office, and I saw their workout room, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been here before. I've seen this workout room before. It's like the stuff that dreams are made of. It's got a bike that's hooked up to a video game.
Cool.
Where the faster you pedal, your little helicopter bike on the screen will go farther up and down. So the object is to try and go through hoops and pop balloons.
Oh, that's really great.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got all these levels. They have Dance Dance Revolution machines set up there. They have all of these physical fitness video games as their gym.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. I would actually start going to the gym if they did that.
That would be great.
Yeah. Schools are putting in Dance Dance Revolutions in their physical fitness because the kids would rather do that than run laps. So.
Yep.
Aaron's going to edit this out. But I suggest we all pool our money, buy a big studio, and start a video game gym.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Okay. Really?
With the juice bar and everything in LA?
I would go. I mean, my problem with going to the gym is I'm so bored when I go. And I don't like to be sort of the trained rat on the treadmill.
There was a gym here in town, I'm not sure if they're still doing it, that you pedaled and got frequent flyer miles. You enter in your every mile you got was like a certain amount of frequent flyer miles. So you could actually pedal your way to like your next vacation.
I would
make it to Orange County.
Yeah, cool. Me too.
I'd be doing it all day long.
I just made it to the beach and I'm tired. I'm going home.
You have two frequent flyer miles.
Exactly.
Damn. All right. Any more?
I got one, but I'll save it for a link at the end.
Oh, cool.
All right, so we are going to start our geek topic of the week.
Yes.
So, Nay.
Yes.
Why don't you just start off by telling us a little bit about how you got into Invasion.
Well, let's start describing what Invasion is.
I guess that's a good idea. Well, can you give us an introduction to
Sure.
Are there hookworms involved?
Not this season, but stay tuned.
But you know what? You should write that in, hookworms.
I will.
That's a free one.
Don't think I'm not stealing that from you guys. Invasion is a sci-fi / family show hybrid. It's a drama on ABC.
Hybrid.
Other keyword for the day. It is about a small Florida town called Homestead, Florida, which is a real town.
Yay, Florida.
That is... this town sort of sits on the edge of the Everglades. This part of our country is nicknamed the Gateway to the Americas, which we found really ironic.
Looks like it's smack in the middle of the Everglades.
Well, the Everglades sort of surrounded on one side, but very, very, it's nestled against the Everglades.
Oh, okay.
And
live there.
And this town is, as we start our story, is hit by a hurricane. Hurricanes come through here all the time. And this hurricane, as it turns out, is different. It brings with it these orange lights that sort of move with the hurricane and land in the water in the Everglades, completely unmolested by the hurricane winds. Our story focuses on a Florida Park Service ranger named Russell Verone, and he is
played by Anthony Sabato Jr.
Eddie Cibrian.
My wife thinks is very cute.
He's very cute. He's got the greatest dimples on television.
Now you know. How did I confuse him?
You're like, I have his picture on my nightstand.
Yeah, he was in my locker for years.
I keep seeing photos of him laying around the house. I wonder why.
Russell is a park ranger. He is also a father of two. His ex-wife, Mariel, is now remarried to the town sheriff.
Rebecca De Mornay?
No, Kari Matchett.
She looks like, exactly. She does look like her, though.
Yeah. Does she really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. And Russell is remarried to a local reporter, and he and his new wife are about to have a baby. So, we have this sort of sci-fi backdrop going on, but, you know, the focus of the show is this blended family, and the invasion is sort of used as a metaphor about,
so it's like,
you know,
the Brady Bunch meets Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that was how they pitched it, Aaron.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly how we pitched it. I'm sorry. I usually do a much better job of selling it. I am just exhausted.
I'm so tired. So
apparently
it doesn't need much selling. It's getting pretty good ratings, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the ratings are, they're good, but I think that, you know, ABC, home of Lost, that amazing juggernaut of television, really wanted a much big, they wanted much bigger numbers. I mean, they have been incredibly supportive of the show, and we're so proud of the work that we're doing on the show. And, you know, the conundrum that we're all facing is, why aren't the numbers just as big? I mean, Lost has an incredible fan base.
Can I be completely honest?
Yeah.
I get nervous whenever a new show that I think has potential starts showing on ABC, because I got addicted to the show Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this show, and they moved it. They kept moving it. They wouldn't tell anyone when it was on.
Yeah.
So even the fans are like, I have no idea when to find this show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they canceled it without any real fanfare. Our friend Mindy worked on a show called, what was it again?
Which one? She worked on 8 Million.
You know, the one that was on ABC that all the fans bought billboards for Los Angeles.
Was this past season?
No, I think it was Once and Again.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the fans loved the show, and there were campaigns to have it keep running, and ABC canceled it. So I get nervous committing to ABC because
it was like...
Yeah, I mean, the network television business is very difficult and very cutthroat, and I think that the execs have more than their audience to answer to, it's really, really difficult to survive.
But now that Invasion has finished its first season, it's moving on to its second, I'm like, okay, now I think I can maybe make that commitment.
Well,
you know?
I hate to burst your bubble, but we don't know yet if we'll have a second season. We're very much on the bubble. We're really? So encouraged by all of the amazing critical press we've been getting, and the fan support has been tremendous. But, you know, friends remind me, hey, same thing for Arrested Development. You don't see that on TV anymore. But, I mean, you know, Steve McPherson, who is the, you know, head of TV at ABC, has been just so great about the show, and he genuinely likes the show, and it feels really good to be working with a network that clearly supports the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we hope for the best. We are cautiously optimistic about a second season, but time
will
tell.
All television shows should be cautiously.
How is the mood at ABC now that Eisner has left?
Hallelujah! Hallelujah!
You know, I honestly can't say. I don't really spend much time in the executive ranks.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything from our ABC execs that we work with about it one way or the other.
Did you guys hear about Eisner's show? Eisner has a talk show.
Yeah.
And his talk show was, I don't remember what it was after, but it was after a very big show. Was it after American Idol or something? I don't know.
Called I'm Eisner, bitch.
Well, it's called Eisner. It is called Eisner, but, or something like that. But anyway, it had one of the biggest drops, like, ever. I mean,
really?
It went from, like, a huge, like, the show.
Oh, you're saying the show aired?
It aired. Yeah.
When?
I don't know. My dad told me about this. He said, you know, like it was, I guess it was on the news or something, but, I mean, look, maybe he got it wrong, but what I heard was from my father, who's not, obviously not like a major news source or anything, but was that it aired, there was a huge show before it, and then it was like, you know, less than a million people watching, you know. So.
Wow. Well, Eisner's gotten involved in a really interesting online venture called Veo, and it will be in competition with YouTube and Google Video.
Oh, right.
And the difference with Veo is that you will, unlike, you know, with the other two services, there will be no limit on how long your content can be. You can decide whether or not you want ads embedded. You can have people pay to watch your video or not. I mean, it will just offer a new range of options.
Yeah, but Google Video is doing that too, so.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, but Google Video blows.
Well,
that could be a difference.
Yeah, but they've got a little bit more of a, you know, of a base.
All right, so let's talk.
Tell us your involvement with
Invasion.
Yeah, how does one get to where you are now? Like, what was
your
string of events to get to working on the show?
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, she was living on the street, and...
I was born a poor black child. I have had a very sort of charmed life in television. Mm-hmm. I worked with Sean Cassidy years ago on a television show called The Agency, which was a CIA drama on CBS.
Oh, yeah, I watched that.
Right. And
that was good.
Yeah, it was a fun show, and it was really a prescient show. It was really scary that, I mean, our very first episode, our pilot episode, which we shot long before September 11th, mm-hmm. was about this obscure terrorist organization called Al-Qaeda that was trying to blow up a major landmark in London, Harrods Department Store. And we were scheduled to debut on September 26th, and then September 11th happened. And it was very... And we had a couple of instances like that. I mean, we had
Didn't
an episode
about
anthrax.
Didn't you have to delay the pilot or something like that?
Yeah, we did. Well, actually, we showed our sixth episode
first.
That's what I remember.
That helps the show because
exactly.
Whenever you start with the sixth episode first, it's better.
Works great for Firefly.
I mean, it's a great way to engage your audience.
Exactly.
You know, to have them tune in to.
So who are these people?
Exactly.
Wait, what's this thing going on with him and her?
Right.
I don't get it because there's something going on, but I can
Yeah.
They're actually going to tell the story backwards.
But it was a great show. It lasted for two seasons.
Which, considering how it started out, is
exactly
two seasons.
Exactly.
Pretty good. Yeah.
And I, at the time, was my first job in television production on the production side. I'd previously worked at a network. I'd worked at USA Network. Mm-hmm. We were doing like USA and Sci-Fi Channel at the time because I'm a huge sci-fi geek.
Woo-hoo! But you had something to do with Battlestar too, correct?
I did.
Really?
So okay, let me put it all in order. So I began my career. I used to work in features, and I went to film school with Peter here.
Oh.
Hey. And I knew the entire time that I was in film school that I really wanted to work in TV, but everyone in the film school was very gung-ho about film and really pushed us in that direction. And I was working in features when I graduated, and I was having a great time, but I knew that my true passion lay in television. And so I had just produced an independent film, and I turned to my boss and I said, you know what, I think I'm going to go find a job in TV. And he's like, are you crazy? You're a producer. You're going to have to start all over and be an assistant. And I'm like, I'm cool with that. I really love TV. And I really feel like if I don't try, I will always wonder, you know, what could have been.
And this is, by the way, is one of the bizarre things in this town, is that the film industry and the television industry is separated enough where if you're a producer in one, you have to start over again in television. It's that's so messed up. It doesn't even make sense at all. But anyway.
It's still a carryover.
I was okay with it because I sort of felt as though I was having a second film school education. I mean, I really wanted to learn the ins and outs of the industry that I was going into.
Right.
So I was watching something on the Sci-Fi Channel and I thought, hey, I'd love to work there. That sounds great. And I gave them a call and they said, well, send in your resume. We'll see if there's anything that comes up. I sent in my resume and the very next day I got a call to go in.
Nice.
And USA and the Sci-Fi Channel are actually sister networks owned by the same company. So I get called in and I interview with these three executives at USA Network and they hire me on to be their assistant. So I have like three bosses. It's my first job in TV. And they really were great in that they kind of let me write my own ticket in terms of what I wanted to do. They're like, well, we've never had an assistant before, so whatever it is you think you're supposed to be doing, go ahead and do it. I read every script
that came
across their
desk. I'll be directing
your
next episode.
But I really was introduced to the world of television development that way and mm-hmm. what goes into networks, you know, developing a show from the writers coming in with the pitch to, you know, actually producing the show itself. And Sean Cassidy was doing a show for USA Network called Cover Me. It was based on the real life story of an undercover FBI family.
Hmm.
And
right.
yeah. And David Icke at the time was the head of the programming department. He was head of development for USA Network. And David knew that I wanted to be, that I wanted to, like, you know, eventually become a television showrunner. And, you know, a year or two later, he introduced me to Sean Cassidy and said, I really think you two would be a good match. You should meet with him and see what comes of it. I went and I met with Sean. I told him what I wanted to do. He was starting work on the agency and he's like, all right, come aboard. And he was really, really great. I had amazing access on that show. I mean, he, you know, let me tag along to every single meeting, all of the casting sessions. I learned an incredible amount from him.
Wow.
And it was a terrific experience.
Awesome.
And, you know, really learning the entire business from the ground up. So I left after a couple of years when the agency was over. Mm-hmm. I got a job as an executive back at USA because you never get out of that organization. They always set you back in. And I was I was working as a development executive, and Battlestar Galactica was the project I was working on. Mm. And I was...
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank Ron Moore and David Icke. They did an incredible... I mean, there was really no work for me to do. I'm a ridiculous fanboy for that show.
It's
a great show. It's a really great show. So, you know, I was there for a year, and then we had the NBC Universal merger, and unfortunately my department didn't really survive that merger. But luckily, I got a call from Sean Cassidy. He's like, long time no see. I've started a production company. Why don't you come work as my development executive? And I'm like, oh, well, I'm free. So
let me check my schedule.
As luck would have it. Yeah, that sounds great. So I began working for Sean, and I started working the summer of that year. In the fall of that year, we went in with the invasion pitch.
How long has it been in development?
You know what? It was the fastest turnaround I've ever seen. Sean went in and pitched. We pitched Invasion the day after Lost debuted.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So things were very good at ABC that day. That was cool. Everyone was very happy.
You're like, yeah!
Sci-fi. We need more sci-fi. Yippee sci-fi.
Pitch something else.
And Sean wrote the pilot script fairly quickly. It just came, you know, a lot of the show is very autobiographical for him. And he wanted to touch on themes that he sort of felt were part of the cultural zeitgeist at the time, and also draw on his family life. So I think it was a very rich pilot because of that, because it was coming from a very specific place for him. And, you know, that is how I ended up where I am today. That was a really long story.
No, exactly. That's what we wanted to know.
I mean, every person in this room wants to work in this industry more. Mm-hmm. A lot of our listeners are very interested in this sort of thing. So,
yeah, I think it's really important to follow your passions and not really get hung up on title and, you know, climbing that ladder, because I think that doesn't necessarily always get you to the destination you're headed for.
Right.
So what is your favorite thing about working on Invasion? What gets you going with this show?
If you had asked me at the very beginning of the show, I would say that my favorite thing about working on this project, was, you know, when Sean came in with this pitch, I'm like, oh my God, we're going to do a sci-fi show? I'm so excited. And, you know, like, seriously, you know, I would come to him with, like, all this information. And one day he turned to me, you know, and he's like, I've known you, had no idea you were such a nerd. Like, you are the biggest geek I've ever known. Like, you know, he came to me one day and he's like, hey, I've got this great name for the, you know, the aliens. We're going to call them EBEs. And I go, oh, extraterrestrial biological entities? And he's like, I hate you. But it was so up my alley. So I was really excited to be working on a show that I would watch, you know, as a fan.
Right.
But... now that we're done with the season, I have to say my favorite thing about working on Invasion, and this sounds so cheesy, Miss America, is the people. We had the most amazing staff on the show. Our crew is fantastic. The writing staff, they're like family. You know, it was really, really hard when the season ended and everyone was going their separate ways, because you feel like you are coming to the end of the best summer camp in the world.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
And it's not, you know, that's not a typical dynamic. You don't always get that lucky and have, you know, such a great group of people who get along so well.
I have some questions, since you're a sci-fi fan, and they're at the beginning of the development of this. Is, you know, the show brings up a lot of interesting sci-fi ideas, especially this concept of identity. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, to me, that was kind of like
defines identity specifically.
Yeah, I mean, including you knowing who. I mean, usually these identity movies are about trying to figure out who your neighbor is.
Right.
But this is not like that. This is almost the opposite. I mean, you have characters who don't even know who they are. I think. I mean, as an audience, they could be lying. I mean, you actually, it's almost teased a little bit that, you know, maybe that's all bullshit. But what was the concept of the show at the beginning? I mean, when you sit down to you know, dream up a new television series, mm-hmm. you don't just say, hey, you know, I'm going to write about my family, put them in Florida, and hell, let's throw some aliens in there.
Right.
So, you know, where was this? What was the pitch? And what, you know, how does that... Yeah.
I think that the kernel of the idea was sort of twofold. On an emotional level, Sean really wanted to tell a story about what happens to a family when disaster strikes. And by disaster, we're talking about divorce. Mm-hmm. When some sort of force rips you all apart, how do you recover as a family? And who am I now? Like, you know, my mom lives here and my dad lives here. You know, I live between two houses. Like, where is my home base? What is my true identity? How do I now define the new relationships when other people come in, when these interlopers, you know, stepmoms, stepdads, stepsiblings come in? Mm-hmm. How do we redefine ourselves? And can I, as a parent, trust this, you know, stepfather to whom I'm sending my children? Like, how do I, you know, pack my kids off, you know, at the end of a weekend and say good luck with that guy who I don't necessarily really know or trust very much. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of, I mean, Sean, you know, growing up as a, you know, as a child in the entertainment industry and, you know, he's been married a few times. I think he's sort of dealt with all of these issues. And that was something that was very personal to him. That was also really universal. I mean, what was interesting was when we were pitching the show, there were so many people who had their own tales of divorce that they related to Sean, and they could really relate to what all of the characters were going through. Mm-hmm. And then on a much larger scale, where the sci-fi came in, was, you know, we're living in a post 9/11 world where now, you know, things are not as assured as they used to be. We now, you know, live in a nation where we know that we can be attacked on our own soil. There were terrorists living among us and we didn't even know. And mm-hmm. there's this new culture of paranoia. We've definitely turned a lot more to religion, more so than ever before. There's a lot of divisiveness in the nation, red states versus blue states. And I mean, the world is changing. And I think that Sean sort of wanted to, I mean, sci-fi is really great because I think that as out there as the stories get, what sci-fi does is it allows us to tell really relevant and topical stories in a way that's entertaining. But you are definitely discussing, you know, issues that are going on in your life today.
It's also not just entertaining, it's safer.
Right.
Well, yeah.
When the threat is aliens, then when, you know, perhaps the threat is, you know, I mean, it's harder when it's terrorists to say
right.
aliens.
Right. Right.
Well, also sci-fi has the what if aspect of basically saying we're allowed to say, well, okay, if you were in this circumstance mm-hmm. where everything's on the line and you have to choose between your wife and your child, who are you going to choose?
Right.
Sci-fi allows you to take those suppositions and say, okay, well, you know, there are aliens coming down.
Absolutely.
All right? Here's what's going on.
One thing you guys did, though, with, I mean, the theme of body snatching, mm-hmm. that sort of ideal, or a replacement, mm-hmm. it's not that new, but you guys did something really different with it that I really liked when I was looking at this, which is what you set up this, I hope I'm not blowing a plot point of this, you set up this thing where the aliens really only want the physically perfect, right? The physically ideal, mm-hmm. right? So I'm sitting there watching all the people who realize
they haven't invaded me yet? Come on!
Exactly. Exactly!
I hate to tell you this, Aaron.
Oh,
all right.
Well, I'm watching this episode where all these people are wandering around and they're realizing everyone in the town, all the pretty people have been taken.
Well, no, let me clarify. It's not physically perfect, aesthetically speaking,
right.
but
it's
yeah.
the
if
health
you,
of them.
Right, right.
Right.
Because
but,
survival of
but
the
if
species
you're gonna,
is key.
Exactly.
But if you're an alien group, you're going to crash down in the one town in America that's filled with supermodels. So, like,
I haven't seen a fat person on your show yet. We need some heavy actors on
this. We've got plenty of heavy actors.
Okay, but I have a question.
Look at the face. If only you could see the face.
I have sent so many people to therapy in that one sentence.
Then my job here is done. Thank you.
But it's interesting that you mentioned like the post 9/11 because it I feel like the show though is the
I'm sorry. I just want to finish that train of thought that I was doing. One of the episodes I watched had this episode where there was this group of migrant laborers.
The Honduran migrant worker question.
That was interesting. Okay. That was very interesting.
That was just a microcosm of what's going. Is going to happen in the series, where all the stronger ones were taken over and made more perfect, mm-hmm. whereas the weaker ones were left out, making that divide that much larger. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I've never quite seen that set up outside of like a Gattaca scenario, but that's kind of different.
Well, Don is very good, and he had sort of a series of suppositions for the show that he was going, well, is it going this way? Is it going this way? Is it going? And one of the ones was the idea of the queens with their individual.
Okay. Well, my personal theory right now is that all the women who are infected are broodmares, and each of them have the males are drones that are going to protect them. That's my theory.
I cannot confirm or deny your theory.
I completely understand. I would never pry.
But I mean, if you go back to we had a 3-episode arc with these two sort of this Bonnie and Clyde couple, Christina and Derek,
right?
And you definitely saw that dynamic going on between them, where Derek is saddled with this crazy girl, and for reasons he can't even fully understands, he feels very bonded to her, like he must protect her, that this now that this baby is in the picture, I think under normal circumstances he would say, this woman is insane, I'm out of here. But on a biological level, he is driven to do everything he can to ensure
the
survival
of the
woman.
I really
like
the casting that you guys did as well in certain cases, because you're not picking the prettiest actor in the bunch.
Yeah, Elizabeth Moss was amazing. She was really great. She was Christina.
Christina was amazing. Yeah. She was really spot on in that part.
Yeah. A lot of people will never see Zoe from West Wing the same again.
I'm watching that going like, I can't believe that's the president's daughter. This is really
innocent
Zoe.
I love the guy, the man who plays the sheriff, William
Fichtner.
Man's an actor. Actor.
I loved him in Contact. I mean, yeah. I thought he was blind. I saw
the crazy
him, like,
thing is, he really is blind.
No,
damn.
He's
then
that
he was
good.
Even better in
Invasion.
What's the meteor movie?
Armageddon.
Armageddon, yeah. Because he looked like he could see in that one.
That, my friend, is acting.
Yes. Okay, the point I was going to bring up is you mentioned kind of this post 9/11 era and working that in, but I feel it feels like it's the opposite in those characters. Like, no one's blown the whistle.
Yeah, and like, why hasn't he blown the whistle?
Yeah, like in a post 9/11 era where, like, terrorist looking guy walks down the street and everyone starts calling the cops.
Well, Russell is our hero. He's sort of in a pickle in that. There was an earlier episode back in like episode 9 or 10 where his wife, the journalist, actually was going to blow the whistle.
Right, and she's going to report.
Right, and the conundrum they faced was, this doesn't just affect our town, this affects our family. Mariel, the mother of my children, is one of these things. And if I blow the whistle and have, the press, the government, whomever, come here, I am effectively hitting the red button and destroying my family. Can I do that to my children? Should I wait to find out exactly what she is and if this is truly a threat? So that's sort of what Russell has grappling with.
He's at the point where he's even willing to leave his kids with them.
His kids are actually with him.
Yeah. Well, now.
But once he found out what was going on, that changed everything.
Yeah. Right. I guess that was the, I guess it was the episode where they got stolen by the sheriff. Right.
I was kind of picking out that all of the people in authority positions that I've seen so far have been taken or have ties.
These creatures are crafty little bastards.
Yeah, I'm just like, how'd they get all these people to go swimming? They must be partially telepathic.
Yeah, I mean, you notice the sheriff, the chief of staff of the hospital, they know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
I like the design of the creatures, what I've seen so far.
Don, do you want to ask your hybrid question?
Which one?
The one I double dare you to ask.
I don't remember.
The hybrid with
I prefer the Prius.
No. It was what was the name? Was it the social services guy who they brought in?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was explained.
Zuma.
Oh, it was?
Zura.
Yeah, it was explained.
Oh, that was Zura.
Yes, that was Zura.
Well,
the thing that I was getting on last night was like, all right, the one white woman who kills someone, they pick up and fly off to the island. But the illegal aliens are going to turn over to health services and drive off. Send them back to Honduras. But it was explained. So that's okay.
That's funny. Let's see. I'm trying to think of some other questions that I was...
Aaron is our brainy film editor. Film
I'm not the brainy
guy.
One.
Well, I actually have a couple things. The first thing I wanted to say is it's really interesting because this is all shot here in California.
Yeah.
And it looks really, I mean, like the plants, everything looks like Florida.
We have a kick-ass production team. Our production designer, everyone in that department, our locations people, they work so hard. And we did go to Florida for 3 days when we shot the pilot. And there are some, I mean, you can tell in some of the areas where we have like these expanse shots where you see these amazing vistas. But for the most part, we just try to recreate that here in California.
Are you shooting kind of like a Gilligan's Island down in Universal?
We shoot a lot on the Warner Brothers lot right behind the offices of the Warner Brothers TV execs, which is really funny to us.
Is that where they used to shoot Tarzan?
I don't know. I know that they shot Adaptation there, all the Florida stuff there. They shot, I think, a Swamp Thing.
So that's their Florida set.
Swamp Thing set?
Well, we've made it a Florida set. We've really, I mean, they brought in the plants. We have this little concrete pond that has been an ocean. It's been, you know, it's been marshland. It's been
amazing green screen there.
Yeah.
I was watching that wondering, like, is it one set that they just keep changing the camera angle on? Do they redress it all the time?
It's a pretty cool set.
I mean, they do a good job.
It's a Transformer set.
You couldn't tell. And I couldn't tell. I mean, like, I know just because Tracy's been down there, you know, but, like, it's hard. I'm watching it. It's hard to tell. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was good.
Yeah.
So the other thing was that this seems, you know, the point that Aaron was making earlier is that this show is really interesting in that one of the things. And it's also something that you've said, that a lot of people thought that they could peg this as sort of an Invasion of the Body Snatchers film at the beginning.
Right.
And yet it's not, because it's not about are they changed. They are changed. It's about how am I changed.
Right.
And you've evolved it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
What else have you guys done that you guys are thinking
that we've sort of tweaked a little bit?
Yeah.
What are your strongest influences? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
There is a show Sean mentioned the other day that he drew on for inspiration, a show called The New People. Hmm. I think it was on in the 60s or 70s. And it was a show about basically the whole world is blown up. There's like, you know, a nuclear attack. And there are about 100 people who survive. And they basically have to start the world anew and create a new civilization. And if you're at all familiar with that show, you will see that some of those themes are being woven into this. So, you know, the audience for a while, we really wanted them to think they're watching one thing, like it's Invasion of, like, we've got this figured out. This is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and it's really not about that at all.
Are they still cut off? I've only seen two episodes. So are they still cut off from the rest of civilization?
Homestead?
Town? Yeah.
No, they're not. They're not.
So it's basically choice in almost all of the cases to not out the aliens.
Right. I mean, Russell has sort of gone back and forth on, if I do it now, this happens, and can I live with that?
That's what you're talking about, how like all the people in authority are either possessed or have people close to them that are possessed of the alien.
I mean, Larkin's alien-ish. Boss, who is the news director, is one. So she's not getting on TV anytime soon and getting her story out. Hmm. She's tried. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Lambert from Alien.
Yeah. I'm not married to it actually being ETs yet. I mean, I know you just stated outright it's ETs. I don't entirely believe
you're
you
a smart cookie.
Okay, then what is it, Don? What's your theory?
Oh, I don't want to blow anything for anyone. Okay, but I have to.
I'm spiritual so, something. It's God. It's
I'm not saying
a new god. It's come on. I want your theory.
Deep sea creatures. Okay, these things are in the sea.
That's surface. Right? Sorry, wrong show.
No, these things are in the sea.
Okay.
All right. Deep sea creatures produce bioluminescence.
Mm-hmm.
They also tend to reproduce in schools, like clusters. Right. And so we've seen two of those traits already show up in the show.
Advanced squids.
That's all I'm saying.
I have a question.
Actually, they look like. They look a little like sharks, actually.
They look like mantas.
Yeah.
So
Love surface. The way they move underwater. It looks beautiful. Oh, okay. Well, that's actually the question I wanted to ask. I'm going to butt in right here.
Okay.
All right. You came out with during a trinity of shows that came out.
Yeah.
Surface.
And we're threshold. Still on the air, baby.
Threshold, you've already blown out of the water, so to speak.
No, God. Why would you go there?
Now, Surface is still out there, right?
I think. No, Surface is done. Surface was 15 episodes.
Oh, it was, okay.
That show was, you know, I'm not sure if the plan was always 15 episodes as opposed to 22, but the show was really expensive to make.
Gotcha.
So there was no way that they could go, you know, the whole year.
So you were last show standing.
Last show standing.
Because I remember there was also one called Triangle that came out at the same time.
Well, Triangle wasn't really a show. That was like a 3-part miniseries.
Yeah. Right. Mm. Right. But so you guys are the last one standing.
Did that?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So did that affect some of the creative? You have did you
keep up with the Joneses somehow?
But you also have to distinguish yourself.
Right.
Okay. You've got water creatures in a way, and you've got a show next door.
Yeah.
That's got it in the title.
Yeah.
So did you guys have a board meeting and say, all right, we gotta make sure that people know what show they're watching?
Well, you know, it was interesting. We sort of made a concerted effort to not pay attention to what the other shows were doing and to sort of hold. No, really. Like, Sean never watched an episode of either one of those shows. I peeked. I'm curious. I had to know. And I watched the pilots of both of those shows. And I felt that even though we were sort of occupying the same world, our approaches were so different that I wasn't too concerned. I mean,
no, I was thinking more about just the appearance. I mean, okay, I'm a new person who doesn't know anything about any of them. Mm-hmm. So I'm flipping through the channels. Right. Executives know this.
Right.
So is there any, like, you know, hello, Mr. ABC is on the line. He wants to make sure that you guys are different than, you know, blah, blah.
Like, did the fact, you know, well, we'll make ours glowing, you know?
I would say the one time that either one of those shows affected our show was, you know, I was a little concerned about Threshold because when it was revealed, you know, in the first two episodes of Threshold that people had been infected with an alien virus and then were acting differently as a result, I thought, but, you know, they were going in a sort of X-Files direction and a very sort of procedural, like, you know, monster of the week, government agents have to track them down sort of thing. And I thought, you know, that's a different taste. So we're okay. And then with Surface, with things coming out of the water, I'm like, oh, for God's sake, come on. Can we get a break? I didn't watch Surface. I saw the pilot, and it felt sort of like a Spielbergian popcorn movie. And I thought, well, tonally, that's a very different show. Ours is more Hitchcockian, and this is, you know, action-adventure.
I remember Surface ended up having some sort of cute animal sidekick somewhere along
the way. They did. I think the little boy had a sea creature friend or something.
The way it was animated, I was like, wow, we jumped the shark episode 6. What happened?
Yeah.
Well, the one time that we were affected was, I remember we were all sitting in the writer's room and this was months ago. We were breaking the pilot and our pilot, the finale. And our finale was a bear to wrestle with because this Zura character who we have in the show, who's like the uber villain who comes in and just, like, you know,
he's the ultimate hybrid, right?
Right. He's the ultimate hybrid. He makes everything really, really complicated for everybody. And he has this big plan for what he's going to do to Homestead at the end of the year. And we discovered, thank God, because someone had watched the finale for Surface that week. Like, thank God Surface was over after 15 episodes, but he had just watched it and he comes running into the room and he's like, oh my God, scratch the finale. I just watched Surface last night. They did the exact same thing. And we're like, oh crap.
Yeah.
That could have been bad. So we retooled what we, and I love our finale. It's so much better than what we were originally planning to do.
But, when is your finale playing?
In late May. We came back on the air after a 4-month hiatus just this past Wednesday. That was episode 17. Mm-hmm. So we have 18, 19, 20, 20, 4 more weeks.
Why do all these shows
take
these
straight, consecutive, beautiful weeks?
Why do all these shows take these massive hiatuses in the middle now that never used to do that, did they? Or am I just high?
No, that's...
like, Battlestar Galactica went away for, like, 2 months.
I think it's really smart. I think it's fantastic. It lets people slow down, take a little break, and think about it.
I think it's actually been more detrimental to us than helpful. Yeah. I mean, we didn't really need the hiatus.
And you lose momentum.
Exactly. And for us, unfortunately, you know, when you're a new show, you can't really afford that.
Nope.
And our show is very serialized.
Yeah.
And it was just the weirdest luck of the draw that we would get this crazy hiatus right when we were, like, in the middle of, like, building some momentum, and then we'd just go off the air.
Just in terms of me watching it, I was like, there's, and pardon the association, there's a 90210 aspect of it, of saying these kids are interrelated, mm-hmm. and there's relationships that are going on between them. There's a relationship going on. This parent and who's angry with who.
Right.
And unless
I'm in, you
can't
take a 4-week break.
You cannot
and then,
take a 4-week break and go, oh, wait. Bobby's with,
right,
you know.
Right.
You guys do definitely succeed in creating a very complex relationship between the family.
I think that's been our saving grace, because I really think that at the end of the day, no matter what kind of sci-fi spectacle you have going on, it's got to be about
character.
The people, you know. And we've always had that going for us. And we've got really interesting, complex, complicated characters. And it's so great to watch them coming into their own, especially the kids in the back half of the season. Yeah. Next week's episode, if there is any episode that you see of Invasion, next week is the one. It's
Matt
fantastic.
That would be what on your show.
He's Ariel, like, the little girl. She's adorable.
She's creepy. She can do creepy better
than
anybody else on the show.
My brother came to the set, and he was just like... I introduced him to Ariel, and she was, you know, sitting in her little chair, and she was doing her homework between takes.
Mommy, you
and
smell different.
He comes up, and she looks up, and she goes, "Hello, how are you?" And my brother turns to me. He's like, "I'm creeped out. Get me out of here."
The ex-wife, I mean, Tracy Mariel. Told me, Muriel, that she actually was not intended to be such a huge character and just kind of grew into it. Is that true?
Yeah, that's sort of true. I mean, Meryl...
she's fascinating. She's
great. We call her the Meryl Streep of television.
I totally thought she was Rebecca De Mornay.
She's beautiful. She's incredibly talented. And, you know, we would sit in the writer's room and, you know, sometimes we would, like, agonize over, you know, a pivotal scene or a bit of dialogue. And then we'd say, oh, Kari's doing it. Kari, who plays Meryl. We're like, oh, she'll make it work. I mean, she she can take anything and really make it very real and very grounded. She's amazing. And her character, you know, started as this sort of victim, a really vulnerable, overprotective mother who this horrible thing happens to. And she has become, she never played it that way. She never allowed herself to be a victim. She has been fighting for her humanity from the get-go, and she became this heroine who is so fascinating to watch. You know, the fans... homed in on her immediately and sort of, you know, she was kind of the character that they really loved and really were invested in. And it was really cool to write for her.
Was so impressed by her on the set. You know, that's all she could talk about.
So. She's very sweet.
All right. So I have a question. In terms of sci-fi, a lot of the times you have an exposition problem where basically you're saying, we have to get this across.
Right.
And it's going to be this monologue. Do we split it up? Do we give it to this person? How have you gotten through that obstacle on Invasion in order to say, okay, wait, we're coming to realization without making it trite or annoying or
I'll tell you now that exposition is the bane of our existence.
Okay.
No one likes to write it. No one likes to say it. And we, unfortunately, with the type of show we have, it's such a complex show. And
you have to.
From week to week, you really do need to remind people, you know, this is where we are. This is what it means. This is why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to find interesting ways of getting it out there. You know, we've got a great character in Dave, who's the conspiracy theorist of the show.
Right.
Who,
he's the
wild-haired guy. Yeah, he is Larkin's brother. And he's cool in that, you know, it sort of makes sense for him to say, okay, here's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And he can spin it in, you know, his crazy Dave
Summarize.
Way. And it's like, well, you know, it's exposition. We're all on board the Exposition Express. But at least he makes it fun
so
and
wait,
interesting.
So wait, you're saying that if your ex-wife has been taken over, blah, 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 that you're actually going to drive down the road?
I don't have to tell you that aliens are among us.
Yeah. You know, that's funny. I used to be a huge fan of 24. And, you know, every week I'd watch it. And so then I got it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch these, especially...
back to back.
Serials back to back, you notice suddenly how repetitious the dialogue is. You don't notice
the first
it
when 10 minutes every time.
Yeah, you're like, why do they keep mentioning that over and over? You don't ever see it when you're, you know, when it's been a week.
Yeah.
You just absorbs. When you watch 3 episodes in a row, you're like, criminy. Just move on, you know. I know already.
I mean, I think the fans most reacted to the character of Larkin. And unfortunately, that actress, Lisa Sheridan, had the horrible task of reminding the audience every week that her character was pregnant, and because she's so, her character is so early, I mean, it was, she was like 3 months, that you couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. And you know, this was going to sort of play into the story later on, and so, you know, you're always sort of writing the show as though someone was tuning in for the first time and they need to know like all of these important bits.
Right.
But I know that, you know, online, you know, on fan forums and everything, they're like, and of course Larkin mentions within 2 seconds that she's pregnant, and she tells us she's pregnant, and she tells us,
damn it, I'm pregnant.
you just need to have her have a t-shirt that says Preggers.
Right. I think we were all relieved when, you know,
she's
like
showing.
When she hit that like period where she could be showing and didn't have to refer to it. But
awesome. That's interesting.
Right. Other than that, what is the hardest thing to do on Invasion from your point of view?
Oh, I think the hardest thing for us to do was to, on a weekly basis, sort of place ourselves in the shoes of Russell and say, all right, I've just found out that my town is slowly and insidiously being taken over by these people who may not be human anymore. What am I going to do? Because I can't leave town, otherwise that ends my series.
Right.
So to sort of on a weekly basis come up with just, you know, things that he should be doing that wouldn't make you at home say, oh my God, get in the car and drive away. I mean, he's a hero, and I am not a hero. I would get in my car and take off. I would be like, see you guys, you know, good luck.
Take the kids and get out of town.
Right.
But can I make a couple suggestions? This might be easy, really easy for you. Transporters can break down. And the holodeck can break down. That will always
don't forget, you know, timescape issues.
Oh yeah, timescape issues. Yeah. And
you can always go back in time to adjust what he did originally.
There
you go.
Or where were you guys?
Space anomaly.
Year.
Yeah,
there you go.
That always sets a plot.
Wormholes.
Wormholes really good. Exactly. You could have him slingshot around the sun. That always works.
But these are all ways of like like if you have a piece of technology or some plot point that would always get you out of a situation. Spatial anomaly just stops it. Like, you can't leave the town because of a space anomaly.
Yeah. Oh, also,
well,
the box. You can use the box. You put the box in a corner of a room. Nobody can open it, and everybody wants to know what the box is in, and people keep on trying to kill people to get to the box.
Right. And never
just
open
put the
it.
Box and
well,
never open it.
Well, fortunately, we figured out that, you know, in real life, life happens, and you can't always do things according to your own schedule. So even though Russell may have had a very clear through line of what he thought he should do, he's got kids, he's got an ex-wife, he's got a current wife, and nobody is really giving two shits about his schedule. So, you know, right when you want to go take down the bad guy, your teenage son decides to go all American History X on people in town, and you've got to deal with that. So lots of complications for our hero, and I think that always lent to really great drama, and really got us back to the core of family drama, which is what our show's about.
Awesome. Cool. Do you have anything else coming up for yourself right now, projects-wise, or are you staying concentrated on Invasion?
I am working on a fantastic project of sitting on my couch, watching Oprah, eating chocolate, and just enjoying the hiatus.
Okay, well, you have to let us know how that turns out.
Yeah,
I highly recommend the Best of Oprah DVD. Get it on Netflix. Really good.
I'm actually going to catch up on a lot
Tom Cruise
of TV.
This episode is amazing. Especially the re-edit. Have you seen the re-edit of Tom Cruise?
With the
Emperor.
Yes.
And Emperor like.
It's my screensaver.
It's genius.
Okay, so we have been talking about Invasion, and we have found out that Invasion has not yet been picked up for a second season. So to all of our fans out there who are interested in seeing more Invasion, now would be an excellent time to write to ABC to ask them for more.
Because fans can make a difference.
Big time.
We have seen in the past that, you know, the executives listen.
Hey, Scrubs. Scrubs got saved by the fans.
In the meantime, tune in Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. after Lost. 9 p.m.
Oh, you're right after Lost.
Yeah, we're right after Lost.
Wow. Right. You got to go up after Babe Ruth?
I know, exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
it's a blessing and a curse. Right. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for staying awake through this.
I can't wait to go to sleep.
I bet. All right, do we have anything?
Let's do our little bit.
We have a bit. It's a very brief bit. Well, our bit this week, in theme with the idea of identity issues and body changes and, well, okay, we didn't really have a great one for this one. So we're just going to discuss, if you could inhabit somebody else's body for a day.
What?
Inhabit. Oh, live in.
Okay.
We made all sorts of dirty jokes before that.
If you could be another person for 24 hours and only 24 hours.
Real person
in the real world. Who would you want to be?
Mighty Mouse. Yeah, exactly.
Or should we open it up to characters? We could do everyone.
Yeah, sure.
Everyone. Okay. Of all the people in the world or your imagination, who would you want to be?
Who could you be?
And so who suggested this first? I think it was Matt.
Yeah. So. Very real people, I would want to be Michael Jordan.
Oh, good.
I just really would want to be Michael Jordan. Because
really?
Yes.
That
yes.
is so I have out no of interest left field. I would have never guessed that.
Not because
that
he's a sports celebrity. But, you know, Matt wants to be 8
tall.
Foot 12,
you know? I would love to be 6'8" once in my life, and I want to be able to dunk from the free throw line. I would love to be able to understand that level of athleticism, to be able to be that good at what you do, at specifically that level of athleticism. And I also want to be Lenny Kravitz because
he gets all the chicks.
Because he's like, I mean, come on. You're a guy and you can look at Lenny Kravitz and go, okay, that's a sexy rock star. I don't want to be right.
Well, no, you can do that.
Nice, Aaron.
You're metrosexual, though.
Matt only shops like he... wait, let me try that again. Matt only looks like he shops at Game Art.
Nice time. And you used Game Art. Game Art in a sentence.
I haven't worked Jeff Gannon in the show in a long time. I just missed a good reference. Give me a minute.
Right. George Bush, you know, because I figure, you know, got to be the president and fix all the things he's messing up.
In one day?
Hey, you know, one day
that's
be a
busy day.
But you know,
very busy day.
I see the next season of 24 could be trying to fix everything in the United States.
You know, it would be Dave, but you know, meets Groundhog Day.
It'd be a plot for a movie. Oh no, it's been done, Dave.
Dave, yeah. You know, I'd have to, you know, be like Keira Knightley or someone like that, just to see what it's like to be a woman.
I have no interest in being a woman.
Yeah, it scares me.
It scares me too, but
it's not bad.
I figure if you're gonna be,
yeah, but you've got practice. I wouldn't know it. I'd be like staring at myself in the mirror all day.
I'm just picturing Aaron in the bathroom staring at the mirror with a mascara stick,
going, "What the hell?
I have no idea where to put
this." Has
this
opportunity and he's wasting it on makeup. I'm worried about it.
Exactly.
No, but like, look, I figure, you know, if you're going to have this ability, you got to try some things that you know, figure things out that you wouldn't otherwise.
That's why I want to dunk, because I am never in my life going to dunk.
I would, you know, of course, go for somebody like Brad Pitt. You know, he gets all the girls, something like that. Of course, you gotta do that. And then, you know, some studio executive, because then I would give myself a 3-picture deal.
That's what I was going to pick. I'd be
a 12-picture deal.
And then the
deal.
Next morning you walk in and he's like, "Who the hell are you?
Look on your desk.
On the contract."
Yeah, I was going to pick like Steven Spielberg or Ridley Scott, just so I could like have a vision of like what the mindset or the day goes for him, so I could maybe work it back in.
Yeah.
But
actually, it'd be neat to kind of be like Paul McCartney, to be done. You know, to be like, okay, I've won every award in the entire world. I am a knight.
Yeah, but you're only getting his body. You don't get to be him, do you?
Yeah, well, you didn't specify that.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
Fair enough.
No, it's just for a day. You get the body for a day. It's Body Snatchers.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you only get the body.
Hey, on Invasion.
I thought it was an invasion-y, where you're kind of like...
You don't get that whole identity with the mind and everything? Cause
Invasion, man.
I am not going to be Stephen Hawking after all that.
You're right. I would have... That's another good one. Stephen Hawking.
Genius.
Actually, that's a really good
one. You'd be like, oh, shit. I didn't understand... You're stuck in the wheelchair. And you're like, I didn't understand the question.
No, you'd actually be like, I didn't understand the question.
I'm sorry.
You bastards.
You get the mind.
Okay.
You just don't get the experiences. You don't know everything that they know.
Then why?
Come on. It's got to be invasion-wise.
You're pretty darn smart as Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be Stephen Hawking.
But I wouldn't know everything you knew.
Exactly. I mean, you got to understand the brief history of time.
You can't just have the brains. You got to have the edumacation.
Okay, so you want a brain possessed? Okay.
I do.
I can understand that.
Yeah. That's a different question.
But if he's not valid, then I was going to say Dana Scully, but then I get that whole chip in my neck, and that's not cool.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
Back to Stephen.
Back to Stephen Hawking.
Babies abducted. And
yeah, but
Who
is David?
But you get Mulder.
Who is David Duchovny's wife?
I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time pegging your man now because Mulder and the guy from Law or
Wentworth
Miller. Breakout. That's, I'm having.
She's got a thing for Duchovny.
They're both Princeton grads. They're both really smart. I think I like really, really smart guys Mulder, who are slightly geeky.
So yeah, who look like who look like they can be a little bit mean if they need to be.
Mulder? Mulder didn't look like he could ever be mean.
Wow.
No, but she liked that prison break shaved head. You know, a little bit of a scowl.
You know, I have to say that I've seen him around for a long time, and it wasn't until he, you know, shaved his head and put on the prison blues that I was like, you're kind of cute. Mm-hmm. Very
dreamy.
You
like the bad boys.
I do. That is
that,
a problem.
That looked really? Like
a you know that.
I didn't know that about you.
You did know that about me.
No, I didn't know that.
You did know that.
All right.
I guess you kind of did.
We need Don. We need Don.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Don.
Don wants to be a little Japanese girl anime.
Actually, no. I'm Sailor Moon. Kind of like you. I don't especially feel the need to do the gender switch thing.
Okay.
I wouldn't object to it though. I'd say one of the two things I'd want to be is Tom Cruise, because
you want to be crazy.
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah. That's part of it. You know, is to be able to embrace your eccentricity and just run amok with it.
All you have to do is be rich.
That's true.
But the other thing is, I would like to know what it's like to be short. Like, so I you have the,
why don't you just, how about you be Matt?
We'll switch, man.
Despite Matt's many complexes on the issue, your average height, Matt.
How tall are you?
I'm 6'4".
Oh.
And I grew past my father when I was 12 years old.
Can I tell you something really odd?
That's
I come from a family of really tall people, and 6'4" to me seems like an average height. Like, I did not notice that you were tall, and I don't notice that most tall people are tall. They seem, to me, that's normal.
Right.
And I remember when I moved to Los Angeles, I called my family. I'm like, everybody's short here. I am in my country. This is amazing. I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
You feel like Los Angeles is short people?
Yeah. I mean, just compared to where I grew up and the family. My brothers are 6'9", 6'8", and 6'6".
Oh, my damn. God.
And my dad is 6'4". I mean, that to me was just what I grew up with, and that was normal. So I did not. I'm almost 5'3".
How tall is your mom?
She's 5'10".
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
What mutant gene did you get?
Cholera. I didn't get the hookworm.
All right. We should wrap this up so our fans can actually download this and put it on disc.
Fit it in our podcast.
Exactly. So,
who would you be?
Yes.
Spielberg or...
what can I say that?
Ridley Scott or something, you know. One of the greats.
Okay.
Everyone knows I'm a big Ridley Scott fan, so.
All right. Well,
Nay, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah,
thanks for having me. This was fun.
Excellent.
And you guys have a good geek week, and we'll probably be back on schedule here because
Aaron will be getting his life back.
Aaron's life is slowing down. My life is slowing down. Things are good.
Excellent. Right. Cool. Well, have a good geek week, everybody.
Rock it out.
Geek it out.